In the last episode, we built the basic picture of an airfoil, a shaped surface, such as a wing, designed to work with airflow. This time, we will use that picture to understand stalls, added wing demand and turns, and why avoiding a spin starts well before anyone needs a spin recovery procedure. This podcast uses artificial intelligence-assisted production. The voices in this episode are artificial intelligence-generated, not human speakers. Each episode's factual content is reviewed against cited source material before audio production, but it is not reviewed by a certificated flight instructor. This podcast is not flight or maneuver instruction. Always use current FAA information, applicable regulations, and your aircraft's approved documents.
Welcome to PPL Study Podcast, a source-conscious study companion for U.S. private pilot airplane learners. Come along as we talk through the Pilot's Handbook of Aeronautical Knowledge and the Airman Certification Standards. In this episode, stalls, load factor, and spin avoidance. How the airflow picture connects to practical decisions. What the ACS is asking you to connect.
A private pilot ACS does not present a stall as a single airspeed to memorize. In its slow flight and stall material, it puts several variables in the same sentence. Angle of attack, airspeed, load factor, power setting, weight and center of gravity, attitude, and yaw. That list can sound like a study card pile. It is more useful as a reminder that the airplane is one connected system. A change in one part of the situation can alter what another indication means. For example, airspeed is important. Pitch attitude is important. A stall warning is important. Coordination is important. But none of those, by itself, is the aerodynamic definition of a stall. The definition starts with angle of attack.
So the ACS is not asking me to choose the one instrument or cue that matters most. It is asking me to understand how the cues and conditions fit together.
Exactly. The ACS gives a learner a map of connected variables. It also identifies risks that belong in the same map. An inadvertent stall warning, uncoordinated flight, secondary stalls, accelerated stalls, cross-control stalls, and inadvertent spin and loss of control. You will hear coordinated several times before we take it apart. For now, hear it as the airplane being aligned with the airflow rather than yawed across it. After the load factor discussion, we will come back to coordination, slips, skids, and why that alignment becomes especially important near a stall. Rather than treating that list as disconnected checkride terms, we will make its logic easier to hear. First, name the condition. Then ask what makes the wing reach it. Then decide how to avoid combining a stalled wing with yaw.
Stall. Name the condition first.
A stall is an aerodynamic condition. It occurs when the wing exceeds its critical angle of attack, and the smooth airflow over the wing is disrupted. Build the picture one piece at a time. Imagine looking at the wing from its side. Draw a straight line from the rounded leading edge to the trailing edge. That imaginary line is the chord line. It is fixed to the wing. It moves wherever the wing moves. Now draw an arrow approaching the wing from ahead, and a little below or above, depending on the wing's path through the air. That arrow represents relative wind. Unlike the chord line, its direction changes when the airplane's path through the air changes. Angle of attack is the angle between the chord line and that relative wind arrow. Increase that angle far enough, and the airflow can no longer stay smooth over the wing in the same way. The critical angle of attack is the point where the stall occurs. Notice what is not in that definition. A particular indicated airspeed, a particular horizon picture, or a particular power setting. FAA guidance says the critical angle of attack can be exceeded at any airspeed, any attitude, and any power setting. That does not make airspeed, attitude, and power irrelevant. It means they are clues and conditions, not the definition. They help us understand how close we may be to the critical angle of attack in a particular situation. If you can see diagrams while listening, the show notes link directly to the Airplane Flying Handbook's critical angle of attack figure. Look for the chord line, the relative wind arrow, and the angle between them. Those are the pieces to keep separate in your mind.
I think I see why the wing stalls at this speed is incomplete. The speed can be associated with a situation, but the wing reaches the stall because the angle between the wing and relative wind became too large.
That is the earned conclusion. Say it in plain language. A stall is about angle of attack. Airspeed often warns us about a changing condition, but it does not redefine the condition.
Recognize the approach to a limit.
Angle of attack is not usually shown by a standard cockpit needle. That is why stall recognition matters. The Airplane Flying Handbook describes an impending stall as a condition in which the angle of attack has produced a warning but has not reached the critical angle. The full stall follows when the critical angle is exceeded. The useful word here is recognition, not prediction by one cue. Depending on the airplane and equipment, the pilot may notice buffet, an aural alert, a light, a stick shaker, a changing sound of airflow, changing control feel, a slower airplane response, or a visual picture that deserves attention. The exact combination is not universal. Some airplanes have stall warning devices. Some provide warning through their aerodynamic behavior. Some have both. A stall horn is valuable information, but it is not a complete substitute for understanding the airplane or for noticing the rest of the condition. The practical bridge is your POH or AFM. It tells you what warning equipment and indications your airplane has, what its approved procedures are, and what speeds and configurations the manufacturer publishes. General aerodynamics tells you why those things belong together. The approved documents explain how they apply to the airplane you are planning to fly.
So I should learn my airplane's warning cues instead of expecting every training airplane to feel or sound the same near a stall.
Yes. The general takeaway is to preserve useful airflow over the airfoil by recognizing a developing high angle of attack condition early. The airplane-specific cues and procedures come from the airplane's approved information and training.
Airspeed is useful, but it is not the definition.
Published stall speeds are not dismissed by the angle of attack conversation. They become more understandable. The Airplane Flying Handbook explains that a published level flight 1G stall speed is valid only under particular conditions. Unaccelerated 1G flight, coordinated flight, one stated weight, typically maximum gross weight, and a particular center of gravity, typically maximum forward CG. We will define coordinated flight in detail later. For this published speed statement, the immediate point is that the airplane was not yawed across the relative wind when that reference value was established. Picture that as a label on a carefully described test condition, not as a floating line that follows the airplane through every possible flight condition. The number is useful because it tells you something specific about that airplane under those stated conditions. It is not a universal statement that the wing is always equally far from critical angle of attack whenever the airspeed indicator shows a particular value. What can change? Weight can change. Center of gravity can change. Configuration can change. The airplane can be turning or accelerating. Coordination can change. The wing may be asked to produce a different aerodynamic force. The POH or AFM is where those general relationships meet the particular airplane, its published speeds, the conditions attached to them, its configurations, limitations, and procedures. That is why we should not replace a published number with a slogan about angle of attack. We need both levels of understanding.
So the practical use is not ignore the published speed because stalls are about angle of attack. It is use the published speed for the conditions it describes, and remember that changed conditions can change the airspeed where the same critical angle is reached.
Exactly. That bridge keeps the theory from becoming vague and keeps the number from becoming magical.
Load factor, a way to name wing demand.
Load factor is a compact name for how much aerodynamic load the wing is supporting compared with the airplane's weight. The word factor just means a multiplier. At 1G, the wing is supporting one airplane weight's worth of load. That is a familiar unaccelerated baseline. Think straight flight with no change in the path that is pressing you unusually hard into the seat. At 2G, the wing is supporting twice the airplane's weight in aerodynamic load, and you feel about twice the normal seat pressure. That does not mean the airplane's actual mass has doubled. It means that, for that moment and condition, the wing has been asked to produce twice as much supporting aerodynamic force as the 1G baseline. That distinction is why the phrase is useful. It names the job the wing is doing, not a property permanently attached to the airplane.
So, 1G is my reference point, and 2G means the wing is carrying twice the usual aerodynamic load. Not this airplane has somehow become twice as heavy.
Exactly. And because the wing is a critical angle of attack, extra demand matters. In a given condition, one way to make more aerodynamic force is to increase angle of attack. That can move the wing closer to its critical angle, even though the airspeed may look higher than the published 1G stall speed. Here is the practical takeaway before we look at a turn. Load factor is the bridge between what you feel, what the wing is being asked to do, and why the stall speed picture can change.
How a level turn makes the demand visible.
This is one of the places where a diagram is genuinely worth a look. The show notes link to the PHAK figures, but you can form a workable mental picture without one. Imagine one arrow coming out of the wing. In straight and level flight, draw that arrow straight up. Its upward part supports the airplane against gravity. Now begin a coordinated turn while maintaining altitude. The wing force arrow tilts inward, toward the center of the turn. The inward part is what bends the flight path. But once the arrow tilts, a shorter share of it points upward. If you did nothing else, there would no longer be enough upward support to maintain altitude. So, to keep altitude, the whole arrow has to grow. Its upward part still needs to equal the airplane's weight, and it now also needs an inward part to make the turn. That larger whole arrow is the increased load factor. Notice the conditions in that picture, coordinated and constant altitude. It is not a claim that any bank angle in every climb, descent, slip, or skid automatically produces one memorized G value. It is a precise picture of why a level turn creates added wing demand. The FAA's PHAK gives a useful checkpoint. In a coordinated, constant altitude turn at 60 degrees of bank, the load factor is 2G. The wing must produce twice the airplane's weight and aerodynamic load to maintain altitude while also curving the path.
So the extra G in that picture is not caused by the bank angle alone. It comes from trying to hold altitude after the wing supporting force has been tilted inward.
That is the important articulation. Bank changes the direction of the force. Holding altitude makes the wing increase the size of the force. Together, in a coordinated level turn, they create the familiar load factor relationship. And this is why the FAA warns that the relationship gets more demanding quickly as bank increases. A little more bank at the steep end is not a little more work for the wing. It can be substantially more work.
YG changes the stall speed picture.
Return to the wing's limit. The wing does not know or care whether the extra demand came from a level turn, a pull-up, or another maneuver that increases load. It still has to make the required aerodynamic force without exceeding critical angle of attack. If the wing is asked to carry more load, it needs more angle of attack to support that load in the otherwise comparable condition. That is the connection between load factor and accelerated stalls. The critical angle can be reached at a higher airspeed than the published 1G value. The PHAK describes a numerical relationship this way. Stall speed changes with the square root of load factor. We are not using that as a cockpit calculation. It is a compact way to see the size of the change. At 2G, the multiplier is the square root of 2, about 1.41. As a simple illustration, a relevant 1G stall speed of 50 knots becomes about 71 knots at 2G, with the comparable conditions assumed. That is not a speed to carry into a maneuver. It is not a replacement for a POH or AFM number. It is proof that the phrase, "I have plenty of airspeed," can be incomplete when the wing is being asked for substantially more load. The reverse mistake is also worth avoiding. A higher indicated airspeed does not, by itself, tell you the current load factor or angle of attack. Load factor describes the aerodynamic demand in the condition. Angle of attack describes how close the wing is to its limit. The variables are related, but they are not interchangeable labels.
So, I should not memorize 60 degrees means a particular stall speed. I should recognize the level turn example as 2G, understand why 2G moves the stall speed relationship, and use my airplane's published information for the actual condition.
Yes, that is the useful three-part connection. A changed flight path can add wing demand. Added wing demand can require more angle of attack, and the same critical angle can then arrive at a higher airspeed.
Bank angle is a clue. not the whole answer.
It is tempting to turn the 60-degree 2G example into a shortcut, see a bank angle, announce a load factor, and move on. But bank angle alone does not tell the whole story. The 2G number describes a specific picture, a coordinated turn in which the airplane is holding altitude. In the force aero picture, the demand grew because the airplane was both banked and maintaining altitude. The vertical part of the tilted force still had to support the airplane, so the whole force had to become larger. If the airplane is not maintaining altitude, that exact level turn relationship is no longer the picture you are using. And if the airplane is not coordinated, it has a different problem in addition to its load. This is useful because it tells us what to ask rather than what to recite. What flight path am I trying to maintain? What force is the wing having to make to maintain it? Is the airplane coordinated while I ask for that? Also, a level turn is not the only way to increase load factor. The PHAK specifically calls out a quick pull-up as another situation that can produce higher load. The common thread is not the name of a maneuver. It is the attempt to change the airplane's path in a way that asks the wing for more aerodynamic force.
So bank angle is a useful alert because it can be part of a higher load situation. But the better mental question is whether I am asking the wing to keep supporting altitude while also changing the path.
Yes. The most useful version is a relationship, not a flashcard. Bank changes the direction of the supporting force. Holding altitude can make the total force grow. The larger total force is load factor.
Compare the pictures before you calculate anything.
Here are three short pictures to test whether the words load factor have become useful. Picture one, the airplane is in straight, unaccelerated flight. The wing is supporting the airplane at 1G. The published 1G stall speed is relevant only with the conditions, the manufacturer states. Picture 2. The airplane is in a coordinated, constant altitude turn at 60 degrees of bank. The wing force aero is tilted inward, but its upward part still has to support the airplane. The PHAK's result is 2G. The wing is doing more aerodynamic work, so the comparable critical angle condition can occur at a higher airspeed. Picture 3. The airplane is banked, but it is not maintaining altitude. Do not automatically carry the 2G answer from picture 2 into picture 3. The force picture has changed. Or picture an abrupt pull-up. There may be no large bank angle at all. Yet the wing can still be asked for extra load because the flight path is changing. The point is not to perform a calculation whenever you see a bank. The point is to avoid losing the causal chain. Ask first what is being demanded of the wing. Then remember that the available margin depends on angle of attack, the actual condition, and the specific airplane's information.
That comparison makes the term less slippery. A level turn gives me a clean example, but the underlying question is always the same. How much supporting force is the wing being asked to make right now?
Yes. Once you can ask that question, load factor becomes more than a steep turn fact. It becomes a way to notice when the flight condition deserves more margin, more planning, or an earlier lower demand choice.
Make the square root relationship useful.
Let's slow down over the square root statement because it is easy to hear as a formula and miss its meaning. The 1G published stall speed is the baseline for the relevant airplane and stated condition. If the load factor doubles from 1G to 2G, the stall speed does not double. It changes by the square root of 2, about 1.41 times the 1G value. If the load factor rises to 4G, the square root is 2, so the comparable stall speed is twice the 1G value. The numbers matter only as an illustration of scale. They explain why increasing load can move the stall condition to a much higher airspeed, even though the wing still stalls for the same underlying reason. It reached critical angle of attack. Try saying the idea without the arithmetic. The harder I ask the airfoil to work, the less margin I may have between the angle of attack it needs and its critical angle. Operationally, that means being more deliberate with control inputs and less willing to add demand abruptly when the wing is already working hard. The POH or AFM supplies the actual approved numbers, limitations, and procedures for the airplane.
And the square root keeps me from making the wrong kind of simplification. More G is not a small change in stall margin. But the airspeed number does not rise one for one with G either.
Right. Use the relationship to understand why the margin changes. Do not use a mental multiplication to invent an airspeed for a maneuver or to override the airplane's approved information.
Feel, instruments, and limits.
Load factor often has a human cue, increasing pressure into the seat. That cue can help the idea become intuitive. At 2G, the airplane and its occupants have twice the effective weight in the FAA's level turn example, so the seat feels different. But seat pressure is not a precision instrument, and it is not a stall warning. The PHAK notes that experienced pilots can often judge load from the feel of seat pressure, while also noting that an accelerometer is the instrument that measures load factor. In many general aviation airplanes, that is not an everyday cockpit display. So use the feeling as a prompt for the larger scan, not as a conclusion. Ask what the airplane is doing. Is the path curving? Is altitude being maintained? Is the wing near a high angle of attack condition? Is the airplane coordinated? What does the POH or AFM say about the configuration and the applicable limitations? This is also where two different safety ideas meet. A higher load factor can reduce aerodynamic margin before a stall, and it is also structural load on the airplane. Neither concern cancels the other. The airplane-specific operating limitations exist because the approved envelope has both aerodynamic and structural boundaries.
So the feeling in the seat can make the abstract idea more real, but it cannot tell me by itself whether the wing is near a stall or whether I am within every limit.
Exactly. It is a cue to think, not a substitute for the approved information or for sound judgment.
Using the idea without turning it into a rule of thumb.
Load factor matters in two connected ways. Aerodynamically, it can narrow the margin before critical angle of attack. Structurally, it is also the load the airplane must support. That is why the idea belongs beside, not in place of, the POH or AFM. Your POH or AFM gives the airplane-specific published speeds, operating limitations, and procedures. Those details account for the airplane, its approved configurations, and the conditions the manufacturer used. The general model tells you why a number or limit matters. The approved information tells you what applies to the airplane you're flying. In practice, use load factor as an early awareness tool, not as a number to chase. When you're asking the airplane to change its path while holding altitude, especially as the turn steepens, or when you feel an increasing pull in the seat, recognize that the wing may be working harder. Avoid trying to rescue a developing situation with abrupt, escalating control pressure. Protect the airflow over the airfoil with smooth, coordinated control and make the lower demand decision early when the situation calls for it. That does not produce a universal procedure from a podcast. It gives you a question to bring to training and to the POH or AFM. In this airplane and this configuration, what loads and margins am I creating as I ask it to change its path?
The goal is not to become a human gene eater. It is to notice when I am increasing the wing's jod, connect that to angle of attack margin, and avoid piling more demand onto an already stressed situation.
Exactly. That is also why load factor belongs in this stall and spin episode, rather than in a separate box marked steep turns. It is a way to understand the wing's workload. Whenever we ask the airplane to turn sharply, recover abruptly, or maintain a demanding flight path.
Coordination changes the risk picture.
Coordination is not cosmetic. It describes whether the airplane is aligned with the airflow as it moves through the air. The Airplane Flying Handbook says the airplane is coordinated when its nose is yawed directly into the relative wind and the ball is centered in the slip-skid indicator, except in certain multi-engine engine failure situations. Yaw is rotation around the airplane's vertical axis, the nose moving left or right relative to the path. In a turn, coordination is the relationship among bank, turn, and yaw that keeps the nose aligned with the relative wind. When that relationship is off, the airplane is slipping or skidding, and the two wings do not receive airflow in the same way. A slip and a skid are both uncoordinated, but they are not interchangeable. In a slip, the airplane is moving somewhat toward its low wing, rather than tracking exactly in line with its nose. In a skid, the tail follows a path outside the path of the nose through the turn. The words describe the direction of the mismatch. They are not merely labels for a ball on an instrument. Now return to the two wings. In coordinated flight, they are sharing the aerodynamic work in the intended symmetrical way. With yaw, One wing can approach critical angle of attack differently from the other. Near a stall, that difference can produce a roll and begin the rotation that belongs in the spin conversation. The ACS calls out uncoordinated flight as a risk item. The Airplane Flying Handbook's turning stall discussion makes the consequence concrete. In a slip, the outer wing may stall first and move down abruptly. In a skid, the bank can increase to a potentially dangerous attitude. That is why coordination is one of the pilot's primary protections for the flow of air over the airfoil when the wing is already being asked to work hard.
So coordination is not just a tidy-looking term. It is how I avoid asking two wings to meet a high-demand condition with different airflow.
Yes, that is the causal connection. A high angle of attack is one part of the problem. Add yaw, and the two wings can reach their limits differently. Keep that picture in mind as we turn to recovery, the base to final overshoot and spin avoidance.
The aerodynamic priority in recovery.
The sequence matters because a stall is an angle of attack condition. FAA guidance describes reducing angle of attack until the stall warning is eliminated, then leveling the wings, maintaining coordination, and applying power as needed. That order is not just a list or sight. Reducing angle of attack addresses the condition that made the wing stall. Trying first to hold the nose at a preferred horizon picture, regain altitude immediately, or force a turn can leave the wing at too high an angle of attack. That is why the ACS includes secondary stalls as a risk item. There is an important boundary here. The ACS says the stall recovery is performed in accordance with the POH or AFM. The manufacturer's procedure and limitations control for the particular airplane.
That makes reduce angle of attack first easier to understand. It is not a slogan about pushing the nose. It is addressing the airflow condition before trying to resume the desired flight path.
Well put. The control movement, configuration, power, and other details depend on the airplane and procedure. The aerodynamic priority is to stop exceeding the critical angle of attack.
A pattern decision, not a trick turn.
Now apply the chain to a bounded pattern picture. Imagine that the airplane is turning from base toward final and the runway alignment is not working out as expected. The key decision is not how to salvage the turn with more rudder. The key decision is to stop trying to force the airplane through a picture that is developing into an overshoot. FAA guidance identifies a classic risk chain. A pilot attempts to use rudder to bring the nose around rather than accept the overshoot and use the appropriate alternative. That can create a skid. If the wing is already at a high angle of attack, the stalled and yawed condition can lead toward a spin. Notice the causal chain, not the drama. A turn can increase wing demand. A pilot may try to tighten the result. Yaw is added through uncoordinated control. The wing may be close to critical angle of attack. Those are connected hazards, not separate events. The prevention lesson is deliberately plain. Do not try to rescue runway alignment by creating a skid. Maintain coordination and make the safe decision appropriate to the situation, using the procedures and training for the airplane and operation.
The danger is not simply turning from base to final. It is the combination of an overshoot, a decision to force the turn, yaw, and a wing that may already be near its limit.
Exactly. Naming the chain helps prevent the chain.
Spin avoidance starts earlier.
A spin is not merely a steep turn or a sudden roll. The ACS asks private pilot learners to understand what causes a spin, its entry, incipient, and developed phases, and the relevant recovery procedure. For avoidance, begin earlier. FAA guidance identifies exceeding critical angle of attack while applying excessive or insufficient rudder as the primary cause of an inadvertent spin. Put plainly, when an airplane is stalled and yawed, the wings can stop producing lift unevenly, and the airplane can begin to rotate. An incipient spin begins when the airplane stalls and rotation starts. A developed spin is a more stabilized rotating condition. The airplane-specific boundary matters here even more strongly. The POH or AFM and the airplane's limitations determine what is approved and what recovery procedure applies. The general safety lesson is not a generic spin recovery mnemonic. It is to avoid creating the stalled and yawed combination in the first place, and to recognize a developing high angle of attack condition before it becomes a full stall.
So, spin avoidance is not a separate topic after stalls. It is the reason coordination and timely angle of attack management matters so much near a stall.
Yes. Protect useful airflow, stay coordinated, and do not keep demanding a flight path that requires the wing to work beyond its available margin.
Retrieval review.
Here is the whole lesson in 5 short connections. First, a stall occurs when angle of attack exceeds the critical angle. A particular airspeed is not the definition. Second, published 1G stall speeds give you a valuable point of reference. They describe the airplane at stated conditions. Your POH or AFM connects that reference to the specific airplane speeds, configurations, limitations, and procedures. Third, when the wing is asked for more aerodynamic force, as in a level turn, it may need a higher angle of attack. Added load factor can therefore move the associated stall airspeed upward. Fourth, stall recognition is airplane specific. Learn the cues available in the airplane you are flying and use them as part of a wider awareness of the flight condition. Fifth, avoid the chain that combines high angle of attack with yaw. Coordination is one of the pilot's primary protections for airflow over the airfoil. Do not force an overshooting turn with rudder. For a load factor check, answer 3 questions in your own words. In a coordinated, constant altitude turn, why does the wing need more total aerodynamic force? Why does the 60-degree, 2G example not automatically give you a number for every banked flight condition? And why can a 2G illustration move the stall speed relationship upward without changing the definition of a stall? The answers are, the wing's force is tilted and must still provide vertical support. The level turn conditions are part of the example, and the wing still stalls at critical angle of attack, but added load can require more angle of attack and reach that limit at a higher airspeed. If those answers feel connected rather than memorized, you have the core load factor idea. Those are study connections, not substitutes for aircraft-specific training. They should make the next discussion with an instructor, the next review of a POH or AFM, and the next stall awareness lesson easier to reason through.
Thanks for listening to PPL's Study Podcast. For show notes, source links, and more study material, visit pplstudyguide.com. Send feedback or source corrections to feedback@pplstudyguide.com. The episodes and the research behind them are available for review as an open source work on GitHub. Until next time, study the sources and keep learning.